Check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, Nate and Van are joined by Matt Modica of CTM Baseball to discuss starting pitchers outside the top 50, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. They debate many pitcher values and give their biggest deep targets, as well as players they're not touching. Fantasy jousting.
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. With hashtag Shark Week.
Do you actually balance your checkbook?
But he hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water.
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. And I am joined today by a man with a sweet overtime check, Van Lee.
Oh boy, it would be sweet, but here's the problem with that. I'm salaried.
I knew that. I just wanted to make fun of you.
Rub it in is what you want to do. You want to be just terrible and awful and just make sure that I suffered as much as humanly possible. Well, thank you. I'm excited for that, and I'm happy to be here again.
That's what I'm here for. But, again, more importantly, we are joined today by a special guest, the guest of honor. As Van, you are the guest of dishonor, as we've previously laid the groundwork on.
Of course.
It's the man behind the starting pitcher index at ctmbaseball.com, Matt Modica. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me tonight.
It is a pleasure to have you. Of course, we are talking deep starting pitching today, starting pitchers outside the top 50 according to the Fantasy Pros Consensus ADP. And when I think pitching, I think Matt Modica, because you are one of the best Twitter follows out there, especially it seems like with pitchers, you are constantly spewing out interesting stuff.
Well, thank you for that.
And so how many leagues are you in this year, Matt?
I think it's going to be about five leagues with Fab. And I'm actually partnering up with Vlad Sedler and Chris Vaccaro to kind of lighten the load, because it gets a little crazy. So, you know, between entry fees and – I mean, just the Fab alone is like an all-day event on Sunday, and you got to be pretty much managing it throughout the week. So anyway, like five or six. But I do have another handful – of like draft and holds on the NFBC, where you just got to set the lineup every week.
Those are nice. I like those a lot.
Yeah. Those, I did one of those 2 years ago, and I was going to do one this year, but I ended up doing some dynasty stuff, and that kept me busy instead. But man, it's awesome when you can just do the draft and hold in like January when you've got the itch, but there's not a damn thing going on. So you got this draft going on for weeks and weeks, and then it's really pretty minimal as far as once you get to the season, there's not too many moves and stuff you have to make. So
yeah, I got a couple of guys from the NFBC that we usually start one up like right around Thanksgiving weekend, either right before or right after. So we get going pretty early.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, I guess by now, probably by the time this is hitting people's ear holes, you will have already helped out with Doubt Wars, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend. I'll be doing probably shows all weekend over at Rock and Riley's. They'll be hosting Tout Wars. So FNTSY Radio, we should have, you know, a bunch of guests, just a good time. And over at the Hilton, a few blocks away, I'll be doing some auctions and drafts for the NFBC. So that's going to be a good time as well.
That is awesome. I'm very jealous. So that sounds like a lot of talking, so you better keep your throat well lubricated. What is your drink of choice?
Drink of choice, I tell you, I do like some car bombs. I'm a fan of that. But if I'm just going to have a drink, probably a little Kettle One with maybe like just a splash of pineapple. Just a little splash.
Nice. Nothing wrong with that. Van apparently enjoys a little splash of, what, Pepsi syrup down your front side?
A lot of splashes of Pepsi syrup. Yes. So for the listeners out there, I'm completely covered in soda syrup. So if that if that excites you in any capacity, I'm excited to have done that for you.
I don't know who it wouldn't excite, to be perfectly honest.
But let's be honest here. The correct answer to that question that you asked, Matt, is, of course, Zima.
Oh, yes, of course.
Aren't they bringing Zima back or something?
Yeah, they are.
They're going to try. I was too young at the time to enjoy it when it was still around. So I don't even know what it tastes like, to be perfectly honest. So I'm excited to hopefully see it stocked in shelves, and I'm going to buy some, and so my wife can make fun of me.
I mean, I go back to the Bartles and James wine cooler days, so.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So I'm assuming Zima is a wine cooler then, right?
It was supposed to be like a substitute for beer or something, but I'm sure I had to try one. I don't even remember what it tastes like, but it was pretty crazy. I thought that when I heard that news that they're possibly bringing it back, I was like, what?
Everything's retro now. You've got to do remakes of movies. You got to bring back Zima. It all goes hand in hand.
Yep, damn those hipsters.
Yeah, it's all their fault. So what is your drink of choice? Email us, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Fantasy Amateurs. Matt, by the way, is at CTM Baseball. And if you go to thefantasyamateurs.com, you can find my rankings, and you can buy yourself a T-shirt and many other fantastic things. And, of course, if you can take the time to rate and review the podcast, if you enjoy us on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen, we will greatly appreciate it. So, moving on, I want to get into some very important news.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
And that is that the Twins have released Ryan Vogelsong. Guys, this completely devastates the landscape of the fantasy community. What's the fallout here?
I mean, I don't know. Is this good news for Alberto Mejia?
Yeah, it actually is. Oh, crap. I was going to bring him up much later. What have you done? Oh. Well, we'll get to him much, much later. This was actually a complete joke because Vogelsong is not fantasy worthy. But
really, you don't want to talk about Ryan Vogelsong at length, because I have prepared a statement if you'd like.
Okay, well, fair enough. As long as we're on topic, go ahead and release that statement.
No, I don't have a statement. Who has a statement about Ryan Vogelsong?
Was that the statement?
That's the statement, yeah. Just question mark and just a shruggy emoji, and that's it.
Which, by the way, is what Paul Molitor is known for, is the shruggy emoji.
There you go.
There was actually some obscure names that I didn't even know were still in baseball at all, but I saw like Brandon League and Bobby Parnell were recently released as well.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw Parnell today, and all I could think of was just every year that guy – if someone out there was like, well, he's going to be closing for the Mets, and then they would take him in whatever their league was, and then he was hurt a week in, and he just never did anything.
Yep.
Yeah, as a Mets fan, it was everybody – there was always like this promise. He threw so hard. He was going to be so good, and just never manufactured.
'Twas a shame. Yeah, I was really relying on him. I think that goes back to the inception of the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, Van.
Sounds about right.
I think I was waiting on him, yeah, back in the inaugural season there. Ugh, twist the knife then, all the closers I've gone through. Anyway, let's go on to an actual segment with real baseball players called ADP Wars. And what we will be talking about here, as the listeners well know by now, these are some of the group players according to the Fantasy Pros Consensus ADP. And we're going to be basically deciding if we're up in the draft, which one of these guys we are going to be taking at the draft position. And the first battle that we have going on here is Vincent Velasquez, whose ADP is 190, against Matt Moore, whose ADP is also 190. So, Matt, you are the guest of honor, so we shall start with you here.
This is a really close one, but for me, I think I'm going to go with Matt Moore. I think I'm going to go with the guy who's got the full season in the National League now, pitching at AT&T Park. The Giants revamped the bullpen. What I do like about Moore when he came over to the Giants is he reintroduced his cutter. I think that's going to help him a lot this year. I mean, Velasquez off his, I mean, he's very tantalizing. I think personally, he's a bit too risky, maybe a year away, or maybe even his destiny lies in the bullpen. I mean, it is a live arm, but I mean, he had some crazy home road splits where he was pretty damn good at home and pretty bad on the road, which is surprising.
Yeah, that's pretty backwards. That's kind of like John Gray last year. He was worse on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Van, what about you?
This one wasn't close for me, and I'm going to take Matt Moore, which is fascinating to say because I've never really been that high on Matt Moore. However, with Velasquez, it's to me simply that I don't really ever expect him to latch on and be in a rotation consistently. I figure him as a bullpen guy. I think he's got really good stuff, but I don't know that he ever really tops the innings limits. And last year, I mean, he only went 7-plus innings in 3 starts that he had. Now, I know he was young. He had some really good starts, obviously. But by the end of it, he kind of wore out. And I just don't expect him to put together a full season in the rotation. Matt Moore, I've never been really high on. However, he put in a full season, 198 innings. The second half was really, really good. He was always considered a decent prospect, but always had nagging control issues, which I think you can say about both of these guys. I think Moore reined it in a bit. And if I'm looking at these two guys, I say Moore probably has that next level of throwing innings and producing. Velasquez may have a next level as far as performance, but I never really think he tops, say, 150 innings in a season.
Yeah, it's it's close for me too, but I think I'm going to lean a little bit the other way towards Velasquez. Moore, he's a guy who's got nicked up too. You know, Velasquez definitely doesn't have that the floor that Matt Moore does. So I think if I'm just looking more for floor, I'm going to go with Moore. But Velasquez just really nice strikeouts, over 10, almost 10.5 K per nine last year. It's backed up by a very nice 11% swinging strike rate. He is definitely homer prone. 1.44 home runs per nine last year led to a 4.12 ERA, but his xFIP was much lower at 3.67 since he had a really inflated home run per fly ball. His secondary offerings were not great. They all allowed a slugging percentage over 5.25, and the curveball was really the only plus ground ball pitch, 58% ground balls, and you don't really like a fly ball pitcher in Philly, so I don't know if the home runs will ever really go away. So I like Velasquez for the strikeouts, but Matt Moore, like I said, he's more of a floor guy for me. But I'm probably going upside a little bit with this pick.
And you did, in fact, trade for Vincent Velasquez from me in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League.
I certainly did. So hopefully that's a quality start league. Not that either of these guys are maybe huge quality start. Like Matt Moore, I mean, he finally, what did he make? 33 starts last year, and still didn't quite, hit 200 innings. So,
right,
he's not really a guy who goes deep into games.
I mean, I think the Giants are going to be really good this year. I know everybody's kind of got the Dodgers like running away with the NL West, which I think the Giants are going to be competing with them all the way through. I mean, the lineup is a little suspect. But that rotation, I mean, when a guy like Matt Moore just threw just about 200 innings, Samardzija, I know everybody hates him, but I'm going to figure him for like 380-something ERA and, the 200 innings and, say, 170 strikeouts. And then you got those two horses up front and a rebuilt bullpen. I think the Giants are going to be interesting.
And every year, it doesn't matter if they put together just the worst team imaginable. Every year they have a winning record. It's fascinating to watch. They just take the withered husk of any baseball player and they go, all right, well, you're pretty good here.
Well, maybe they'll pick up Vogelsong now.
Yeah, bring him back for round two.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to our next matchup then, and that's going to be Adam Wainwright, who's going just a little bit behind these other guys at ADP 197 versus Michael Pineda at 199. Van, we shall start with you here. Who are you drafting?
I think you have to take the upside on this, and that clearly lies in Michael Pineda. Another guy that I'm not too over the pond about. Is that an expression? Well, it is now.
Over the pond. I think that's if you're going to England.
Oh, there you go. Well, it worked in this case, so I don't know. Maybe Wainwright's English, and I just don't know it. No, he's just this 6'11", a country guy. Yeah. He's always in local Cardinals commercials, and it's fascinating to watch. Anyway, I'm going Pineda on this one. He basically outperformed his stats last year. but had a pretty solid season. Let me put it this way. He is still only a couple years removed from having that elite shortened season. I think there's another level with him. Whereas with Wainwright, he's older. He's at 35 now. He's got a lot of innings on his arm. He's had, of course, the Tommy John surgeries. I don't think he's going to put together elite ace level years anymore. His ERA was a bit inflated with the 4.62. I think that gets a little lower. He's going to put innings together, but he's also never going to strike anyone out again, particularly now because his fastball velocity keeps ticking down. Pineda's, again, just upside for me. I don't like either of these guys, but if I'm going to take one of them, I'm going to take the guy who struck out far more than innings pitched last year, and that's Michael Pineda.
Yeah, this one to me is not close, so we'll see if Matt will eventually break or see if he'll sweep it. But, Wainwright, I didn't have any interest in him last year. I don't have any interest in him this year. At least I believe he's a little bit cheaper than he was last year. I was so out on him, I didn't really care what his ADP was. Hit close to 200 innings last year after missing most of 2015, so at least that is somewhat encouraging. But he still had a 4.62 ERA, so... But he did have an inflated BABIP, 330 BABIP, and 70% strand rate was low. So his FIP was better, but even hovering around 4 with just no strikeouts at all, I'm just not interested. Michael Pineda is much, much more interesting. And I guess I should say I'm actually, this is sort of a gun to your head kind of decision for me. I'm actually not going to be drafting either one of these guys, especially Wainwright. But between the two, I mean, Pineda's at least got the huge strikeouts. One of the real guys that shines in the strikeout minus walk percentage. He was ninth in baseball in K minus walk percentage, 20.4%. And 14.1% swinging strike rate as well as fifth in all of baseball. So the strikeouts are very real. It's just a matter of, sort of cutting out those meatballs that always seems, he just gives up homer after homer. And while he did make it a full season last year, he's still, to me, pretty injury prone. So that's another, a negative towards him. So like I said, I'm going Pineda here. Probably not drafting either one of them, but what do you think, Matt?
Well, these two guys come down to me for like a roster construction and where I'm at and what I kind of need. Do I need a more secure? I mean, I don't think really either one is secure, but Michael Pineda just pops off the page and he's like that beautiful girl that has an STD that you can't stop looking at, but you can't stop him either. I mean, it's tough. Like you said, he is still young. There is a next level possibly, but I mean, many have been burned. I probably lean Pineda, but I honestly think Wainwright might be a decent value this year. And the curveball, from the reports I've heard in spring training, is back. He's working on the change. I know he got blown up his last start versus the Mets, but I'm really not worried about that with a veteran like himself. And I think this is – I mean, I was off him last year. I didn't draft him anywhere. But the price is just so damn cheap now that I probably will have a share or two of Adam Wainwright. I think, like I said, he might return a value for you. And in other leagues where I'm looking for that upside late, I will take a gamble on Pineda. The problem with Pineda is once you own him, are you willing to cut him? Because, if you cut him and then he does figure it out, you're going to be kicking yourself. So that's the double-edged sword there with him.
Very true. I mean, the attractive girl with STDs, that's the perfect way to put it.
That's all of them. That's all of them, man.
Pretty much.
If I just revealed the life of Van Lee right there in one sentence, you've got it.
I hope you've got a lot of penicillin sitting around.
I'm a doctor, so you know.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. God. All right. So our next one is going to be Hisashi Iwakuma as we roll down the ADP a little bit to 241 overall, going against Taiwan Walker at the same draft slot, 241. And I will start us off with this one. Iwakuma just doesn't excite me anymore. 6.65 K per nine last year. His home run rate was as high as ever. Like Wainwright, at least he made it nearly 200 innings after injury shortened 2015. But he's still, 4.12 ERA last year. WHIP was 1.33, not good. The fastball velocity was down again, 88 miles an hour last year, and he allowed the highest hard contact of his career at 33%. Walker is pretty much the complete opposite of Iwakuma. Like, Iwakuma has a much better floor, in my opinion, and Walker, he's dealt with a lot of injuries, so you really don't know how much you're going to get from him. But his upside is still really, really high. He's the young guy as opposed to the wily veteran in Iwakuma. Walker this spring, I mean, I feel like stats are almost, you can almost throw them out the window from the past couple seasons with him, because he's, you know, new team this year, changing a lot of his, like changing his delivery, going back to the long stride, and he's working on a slider this spring instead of his curveball, which has been a pretty meh pitch for him. So it's going to be interesting to see. I don't think that new ballpark, you know, pitching for the Diamondbacks is going to do him any good, especially since he's been homer prone in the past. 1.81 home runs per nine last year. Very, very much not good. And he even had a .267 BABIP last year, and it didn't do him any favors. So between the two, I will take Walker, just sort of another upside pick. But again, I don't think I'm really sold that much on him. But Matt, perhaps you can sell me on Taiwan Walker.
Well, this one for me isn't close, and it's more of an indictment on Iwakuma. I kind of stayed away last year. The Dodgers backed away from that signing, and pretty much all his skills were eroding last season. He did get the almost 200 innings, as you mentioned, but the swinging strike percentage, that crumbled. The first pitch strike, which has always been a major asset to him, was still very good, but that even went down like 4 or 5%. The ground ball percent cratered like 10%. And there's just really, for me, with Asashi Okuma, there's no upside here. I don't even put him in my top 90. I just don't want any part of him. If if he does have a magical season and returns to form, fountain of youth, then you know what? I missed out. I don't really care. He's not a guy in my – Walker, I mean, he had the foot injury last year. So, I mean, I think we got to give him a little bit of a mulligan on that. He's still very young. The move to the National League does help. The park doesn't, obviously. Spring training is encouraging with him. I mean, I'm going to take a shot on the young talent. I mean, I think some people might be getting a little ahead of themselves right now, seeing the spring, but – I would definitely take Walker over Iwakuma.
All right, Van, are you going to make it a sweep?
I am going to make it a sweep. I think the clear choice here is Taiwan Walker. Iwakuma has gotten to the point where I, kind of like Matt said here, have no interest in him whatsoever. It's just the skills are kind of eroding. And I'd forgotten about that whole Dodgers contract ordeal, which scared me off of him last year. And he put innings together, but they really weren't what you'd seen out of him in the past. And and not to mention he hasn't crossed the 200 inning threshold since 2013, so that doesn't help either. So I'm not a big fan of Iwakuma. Walker is, like we've said, could be on the precipice of a breakout. Maybe he won't be. But I did want to point out, you mentioned the foot injury. Do you guys know what they actually said that injury was last year?
Bone spurs.
No, even better. This is the best thing I've ever heard. It's called flat foot. Like, his feet were too flat.
Really?
Oh, that's man. I don't even know what that means, but his feet were too flat, so they had to fix that. So I don't know what I've never heard that before.
they got foot replacement surgery. You get a whole new foot.
Put like it a sound, or something.
I guess it sounds like one of those old timey things, like from the 1800s. Like, yeah, your son's diagnosed with flat foot. You're gonna have to feed him to the Apaches or whatever. Yeah. So yes, I will take Taiwan Walker.
Okay. Very good. Well, I mean, you should know that diagnosis, being a doctor and all.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, that's not my specialty. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Well, you should perhaps rip out Matt Harvey's throat then, so he doesn't have to talk. Sorry, Mets fan in the house. I forgot. My bad.
Yeah. No. Look, I think I might own one share of Harvey, and that was in a different type of league. I'm hoping he's the Dark Knight or something that resembles that. But coming off that injury, I'm not touching him. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what his endurance is going to be.
Okay, yeah, we actually had some pretty good back and forth last week about him. Van was on him. I was not. So
but, I'm optimistic.
Okay. There you go. I was going to check in on you, see if your stance has changed at all. But he didn't get lit up, at least in his last start, but he's still a bit ailing. So, but let's move on to ADP War number 4, and that is going to be Tyler Glasnow at 284 versus Jordan Zimmerman at 288. Matt, we shall start with you. Who are you going with here?
Honestly, I really don't want either one coming into the season. I think Glasnow does have the talent. I saw him pitch a couple of seasons back at the Arizona Fall League. But this is a kid that can get the strikeouts. He's supremely tall, so maybe he just can't repeat that delivery yet or hasn't found a way to do it. But, I mean, he's walking like 5/9. He does that in the minors. It's not going to get better. What I project for him this season is possibly something like Blake Snell last year, where you saw like an 11K/9, but a 5 walks/9 and like a 160 whip. Maybe the whip's a little lower because of the National League, but I don't think he's ready yet, but we shall see. But, I mean, Jordan's – maybe I'd probably go – if I have to choose, I'd probably go Jordan Zimmerman and hope for a bounce back. He's on the Tigers. I mean, the unfortunate thing is the J.D. Martinez news, because I thought the Tigers would be the one team that has a shot to possibly compete with Cleveland, and losing J.D. Martinez will be huge. And he did suffer injuries last year with the neck. So maybe if Zimmerman is healthy, there's a shot of a bounce back. Maybe Detroit could earn some of the money they paid him.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Van, what do you think?
You know, Jordan Zimmerman has always been kind of an enigma to me. He's one of those pitchers that throws 96 but still somehow just can't strike anyone out. And that, anytime I hear that or see it or see it succeed, I always wonder what the lifespan of it will be. And I know he's still fairly young. He's only 31. However, I'm just not confident that we're ever going to see a return to what he used to be. I used to be pretty high on him because he was a really good pitcher. He limited the walks. He did fine. But now I'm just not all that confident in him. Glasnow's got, like you said earlier, the bit of the walk issue, but he can strike guys out. So that's the kind of pitching prospect that I'm really going to look at as far as maybe taking the next step. I generally try to avoid the guys who, if you're a prospect, you have a 7K/9, but have decent walks, just because I think your floor is really low or your ceiling's really low. So Glasnow, I think, at least has some potential, but I really don't expect either of these guys to provide a ton of value. If I'm at this point in the draft, I'm usually looking for upside. I'm going to go Glasnow and see what you can get.
Yeah. Glasnow is the only one that interests me here. You know, like you said, Matt, if the neck is healthy, perhaps you can see a bounce back from Jordan Zimmerman. It's kind of hard to go with either one of them. Glasnow, you don't even know if he's got a rotation spot just yet. He's had mixed results this spring, like you said, too, still struggling with the command. But at least he's throwing that changeup more. Seems to have found a grip that works for him a little better this year. His competition, Stephen Brault and Drew Hutchinson, they're the other guys vying for that fifth starter spot. But Glasnow is the one with the ultimate upside. I think that it would probably serve him well to actually start the year in AAA and log some more innings down there and work on the command and the changeup. He's got a lot of work to do. And I am still interested to see what Searidge can do with Drew Hutchinson. Stephen Brault is Stephen Brault, and I could care less about him. But, I would rather stash Glasnow, basically, than draft Jordan Zimmerman, even if Glasnow isn't up for a month or two in the season, because I have a healthy hatred for Jordan Zimmerman. He can go straight to hell because he literally single-handedly knocked me out of a playoff last year when he came in and threw one inning and gave up 6 earned runs. And that was such negative points in that league that I actually lost because of those negative points.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just to make a comment, as what you were saying, if I could choose Drew Hutchinson over the both of them, I would. I'll probably die on a hill waiting for Drew Hutchinson to finally do something. But I hope the Pirates give him the shot. I totally agree with you. Give Glasnow at least a month or so in the minors. Try and get everything figured out. Get the delivery fully repeatable. And I think the Pirates owe it to themselves to see what they have in Hutchinson. I mean, he's in the National League. He's in this park. let's give it a roll. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on that hill with you. I've been sucked in by Hutchison time and time again. So, I mean, if he can't make it with the Pirates with Ray Searidge, then there's just no helping him. And then I can finally quit him for good if he doesn't, you know, pull through this year finally. But, I mean, Glasnow, he's just such a work in progress still that it just makes perfect sense for the Pirates to send him down. And they've always been, you know, the type of organization that keeps their prospects down as long as they can anyway, so... let's see. Our last one, though, is going to be Brandon Finnegan versus Mike Foltynewicz. Finnegan drafted at 322 and Folty at 318. So we are way down in the dregs now. And, Van, we're going to start with you on this one. Who you got here?
100% I'm in on Foltynewicz. I like him a lot. I don't necessarily know if that's warranted, but he fits that bill. And I've said this a lot about guys of kind of his mold of a Garrett Richards type, with a big fastball that just struggles with everything else. And we saw signs of it kind of coming together at the second half of last year. He finally put together a season that was at least reasonable. If you look at his total stats, his ERA for the entire year last year was 3.92 with a 3.86 xERA. So he's improved in that regard, and maybe we're not going to see those 5.5-6 ERAs from the years past. I hope not anyway. But I think there's some major upside. I think if he kind of gets a strikeout pitch working, we could see a 3.5 ERA with some decent Ks. So I'm really on board with him. With Finnegan, I always caution against the player that the team that drafted him gave up and converted him to a reliever, and then something happened and suddenly they want to try him as a starter again. So as it is now, basically they're trying to start him out in the rotation. I just don't necessarily know if that holds up. We'll see. He gives up a ton of home runs against pretty much everyone. So I'm just cautious. I'm not really that big of a fan of him. It's more in this case that I'm a fan of Foltynewicz than I am a detractor of Finnegan.
All right. Yeah. I mean, Folty, for me, I always thought he'd be a closer, you know, or a late innings reliever or something like that. But last year, you know, he got his walks down to 2.5 per 9 with above average strikeouts, and he's got that change up to avoid platoon splits. So I guess I'm more bought in on him at least starting as I was in the past, but I think between these two, I'd be more excited about Finnegan. Still just 24. He was, you know, he's a lefty, and I love me some lefties. So, I mean, if you look at the numbers on the whole from his 31 starts last year, it's pretty hideous. He had a 440 walks per 9 and a pretty meh K per 9. And he gave up 36% hard contact as well. Very ugly. ERA just under 4. But if you break it down by half seasons, the second half ERA was 2.93, and he nearly tripled his strikeout minus walk percentage, 4.5 up to 14%. And that coincided with an increased changeup usage especially over the final 2 months. He really started throwing that more. He seemed to fall in love with it. And it gave up just a 167 slug. So it looks like a very good pitch. He still gave up too much hard contact in the second half, and he was still homer prone, so he's still got some work to do, and obviously it's a bit of a homer dome in Cincinnati, so, you know, it's still a flawed profile, but I think between the two of them, I'm more excited to take Finnegan. So, Matt, it is up to you to break the tie here.
Well, I'm going to go with Foltynewicz. I do agree this is a big year for Foltynewicz in the fact that can he be a starter in a rotation, or will he ultimately end up in the bullpen? But very promising last season. The first pitch strike was like almost 64%. I think he can improve on the swing and strike percentage. He was only at 10%, but he's throwing, you know, mid-90s. He's got the gas. The hard hit rate was just below average, which is very nice to see, at just under 30%. But the strikeouts to walks was a promising area there. He's just over 8 in Ks per 9, but under 3, about 2.5 in the walks per 9. So I did like that. But I do think this is a big season that will determine Folty's future. Is it in the rotation or the bullpen? I am not out on Finnegan by any means. I don't think the ballpark does him any favors. He needs to kind of get some more ground balls if you want to try and live in Great American Small Park. As you mentioned, the hard hit percentage was not good at like 35%. But a key to his success going forward, which was highlighted by the 4.5 walks per 9, is that first pitch strike is 54.5%, and that's just unacceptable. He's going to have to improve that drastically. But he, as you said, he's still a young arm. I think he has promise, but for me, I'm betting on Folty in 2017.
Yeah, and I'll admit that sort of one of my blind spots in as far as fantasy is thinking about WHIP. Like, it's always the last thing that I take into consideration. I'm like, oh, he walks a few extra guys. Who cares? He'll strike them out. But the walks count against you just the same as hits. So that is definitely something to take into consideration.
Yeah, it's so hard to get back once it's gone. I mean, to try and shave your WHIP is such a hard task. So.
Yeah, I've tried to shave my WHIP often. It's just too thick. The WHIP is too thick.
That happens to the best of us. You know, one thing I do want to say here, too, this is another kind of thing. If maybe you're debating, you know, whether you want Foltynewicz or Finnegan, one thing I'll look at is at the actual pitcher and see what they kind of look like. Finnegan is a tiny guy for a pitcher. He's 5'11", 180. Foltynewicz is 6'4", 200. Not saying that can't mean Finnegan can succeed, but his route to getting there is going to be a lot tougher just because he doesn't have the natural size to help him in that regard. So that's another maybe key point you could look at if you're personally sitting around trying to decide what you want to do with this.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, like, I will take the bigger guy. I mean, unless it's like Pedro Martinez or Johan Santana. But,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, his name is Finnegan, though. He's like an angry, drunk Irish guy, right?
There you go.
That's very endearing to me.
Nathan, how tall are you?
I am approximately 5'11".
5'11". How about that? I'm approximately 6'4". Let's think about this a little bit more, shall we? Who took the guy who's 6'4" and who took the guy who's 5'11"?
Oh,
I see a correlation.
It's bias. And I'm a lefty, too, so...
Really? Wow, I'm a righty, so it all evens out.
Oh, Lord. All right. Well done, boys. We're going to take a quick break and come back with some targets.
Target acquired.
All right, we are back, and we're going to be positive. We're going to look at some guys outside the top 50 and starting pitchers that we are going to place on our rosters this year. We are excited to do so. Matt, of course, being the guest of honor, we are going to start with you. And, of course, this is all relevant. You don't have to go by the exact letter of the law of Fantasy Pros ADP. It's kind of, you know, you have your own rankings, and obviously you do a lot of your own pitching work. So sort of any deepish league guys that you have that you're really excited to draft this year.
Well, I'm going to base them off of the ADP that I mean, I pretty much play in the NFBC. So I'm looking at guys that are going like 200 and later. And for me, there's a National League guy and an American League guy that I pretty much will be targeting. And the first guy is Jared Eichhoff. I think he's the guy on the Phillies that is the one to ultimately own for 2017. I know Aaron Nola tantalized us last season before imploding in June and getting shut down. That curveball Nola has is crazy good. But Mr. Eichhoff has a good curveball. He's got the slider. He's a guy that's pitched almost the 200 innings. I think he got the 199 or right about there. And he's the guy that's ready to hit that plateau, pass it. I really like him. Later on in drafts, as I said, he's definitely a target of mine. Velasquez and Nola right now coming off injuries, being shut down, are just a little too suspect to me. And while everybody has them for the most part maybe ahead of Eichhoff, I have Eichhoff in my top 50, but I've noticed he goes well beyond the top 50.
Yes, I like him quite a bit, and I also like Nola and Velasquez, so I'm all in on all those guys, even if they are a little injured. So, Van, what about you?
Well, I've got a handful of names I'll throw out there. Eichhoff is one of them. I was kind of high on him last year, and I don't know, maybe had 3/4 of the way through the season, I felt like I was disappointed, but then I went back and looked at the numbers for the full year, and it was actually really good. So I like Eichhoff. I think there are reasons for concern, but, you know, he's still a pretty good value based on where he's going. A guy go ahead.
On Eichhoff for 1 second, I have to cut you off. My apologies.
Yeah, yeah.
In spring training so far, through 19 innings, he's got 21 strikeouts and 4 walks, which I find encouraging as well.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. One guy who's just right outside the top 50 that has basically been the first guy since Ubaldo Jimenez to beat the Colorado Rockies dregs, I suppose, is Jonathan Gray. I really like his stuff. I don't know that I like him at 51, but I think if there's ever going to be a Colorado Rockies pitcher who goes at 51 that could outperform it, it's probably going to be this guy. I think he could kind of slightly outperform it. I'm still not maybe ready to take the risk, but I do like him there. Garrett Richards is healthy. However, I think you're going to have to treat him kind of like Masahiro Tanaka going forward, where the Yankees kind of monitored Tanaka's workload, and maybe he doesn't give you, you know, 240 innings in a season, but he's going to be pretty good. I think Richards has shown that he's healthy after the UCL scare, so there's potential there at 61. Of course, we talked about Taijuan Walker, so that's a big one. I like those guys quite a bit.
Van, as long as you brought up Garrett Richards, you are an Angels fan, and they have a very interesting rotation going into the year. I mean,
you mean bad?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are actually being very positive about them. Like, what do you see from Tyler Skaggs and some of the other guys that are basically hurt all the time, but people are still in love with them?
Well, Skaggs was kind of scary early on because he was really struggling with velocity, and coming off of all the injuries he's had, he's kind of provided some caution. But he threw a minor league game the other day. Everything looked good. He was 91 to 93. He touched 94 once or twice. So maybe there's some optimism to be had about Skaggs. I never really thought he was an elite prospect, but I thought if he became, you know, maybe what he could be, it would be a serviceable number three. Like I said, I'm high on Richards. I think he has a pretty good season. Maybe he doesn't get you 200 innings. I don't even think he really gets you 180, but I think he pitches and pitches well. Velocity is good with him. Ricky Nolasco is going to be there to basically vomit all over the rotation. But
you're welcome.
Knows, maybe he soaks some crap up. Alex Meyer, which we got in that trade, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about him. He's obviously never put it together, but he's a big guy, and the Angels kind of hope for a rebound, so maybe you get some value out of him. There's some potential. They did the right thing that they could do this offseason. There wasn't a lot of pieces out there that the Angels could use to fix what was wrong with their team, but what they did do, the Luis Valbuena signing, just Jesse, I'm blanking on his name, the guy from Oakland, they got to pitch out of the rotation.
Chavez.
Yeah, Chavez. That's a guy that, I mean, why not? It's super cheap. Take a flyer on him, see if he can pitch just a little bit, and see what happens. So, I'm not optimistic about the Angels, we'll say that. But if they come out and win 85 to 88 games and crap into a wild card spot, it wouldn't surprise me that much.
Yeah, I'm not that down on the – I mean, I'm not that excited, but I'm not that down on the Angels at all. I mean, I think Matt Shoemaker is possibly the guy to own out of this rotation.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy almost had like a 68. He had a 68.5% first pitch strike, a 13% swinging strike percentage. I mean, it was all about the splitter. Once he started just heavily throwing that, his whole game changed. I know he got injured at the end with the line drive, but he's a guy that's going in the drafts that I do past the 200 mark, and I think that's a steal. I mean, I've been pretty much trying to scoop him up everywhere. I think he's going to pitch a lot of innings. As you mentioned with Richards, he's the key. But I'm just concerned that they're going to be so cautious with him. And if they start falling out of it earlier, sooner than later, you know, Richards, I don't see why they're going to push him. So that's my main concern. And Skaggs, to me, I do kind of like, you know, the possible upside. But he's just a guy that always seems to be injured, and they were checking him out the other day. So, I mean, I understand the upside for Skaggs, but I'm not that excited.
Yeah, and, you know, he has that thing that I was just kind of discussing, the size disadvantage. If you've ever seen Tyler Skaggs, he's a tall kid, but he also maybe weighs 110 pounds. He kind of has that Kevin Gausman thing going on, though I am really high on Gausman. So that for an injury-prone kid who's that size – I always wonder if they're ever going to have durability in their career.
So I'll ask you, Matt, one guy that, Van, you brought up, Alex Meyer. Do you have any thoughts on him, Matt, like in a really deep league or in an AL-only league? Are you stashing him? Do you think he's a reliever long-term? Because I have a vested interest in him in a 24-team Scorsese Dynasty League that I'm in. I traded Chris, you know, there's contracts and stuff. So basically it was one-for-one, Chris Carter for Alex Meyer. Meyer I get to keep for a couple years at the minimum salary. So I'm hoping that he basically retools his delivery and he can stay healthy and log some decent innings. But are you at all optimistic on him starting?
You know what? Right now, he's a guy that I really haven't focused on. I've just completely stayed away. I think the Angels were smart in acquiring him. And as you see with these guys, like, look at Danny Duffy last season. He finally pitched from the stretch. He found a delivery that was repeatable for him, and it worked. And even like James Paxton, he was a guy, changed his delivery. He picked up some velo. So, I mean, if you can make adjustments, like true adjustments, or start throwing a certain pitch more, like Paxton really excelled last September with that curveball usage. I mean, that curveball usage went up to like 25-26%, and he was really dominant. He's having a really good spring when you look at the strikeouts to walk, because that's really the only thing I do look at. But Alex Meyer, I think for the Angels, especially a team that traded their big chip in Sean Newcomb to Atlanta a couple of years ago, he's an arm they have to gamble on. He should be given a shot. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if he can make that move, but I think he's in the right situation to get that chance.
Yeah, I guess as a Twins fan, I'm not overly optimistic. I wasn't heartbroken when they got rid of him. And I'm hopeful at this point just because I own him in that really deep league, like I said. So even if he's sort of a back-end reliever, I think that'll work out for me personally, but I'd like to see
sometimes him start. Like, you even see what Danny Duffy, again, I'll make the point. He went to the bullpen, became pretty dominant, found something that worked, and then when the opportunity, like going into last year, I thought Duffy was going to be turned into a reliever full-time. I was a guy I was always going after and getting burned. But, I mean, if Meyer can go to the bullpen, get some success, and then an opportunity arises, you know, he needed a change because he was highly touted for the Twins, and it just didn't work out. So,
yeah, they rarely do for the Twins, it seems like. All right, my guys that I'm targeting, I'm just going to kind of gloss over these because we actually touched on these last week with Yancey because he brought it up on a whim. The guys pretty much that I mentioned, starting pitcher 83, Robert Gsellman. I really like obviously the Worthen slider. I think it's going to be working for him. He's got the locks of hair. I think he can be very effective, especially at the price that he's going. Very, very cheap this year. Starting pitcher 97, Eduardo Rodriguez. I've been on him for many, many years, even when he was still a Baltimore Oriole. And I think now this might be the year we put it together. Obviously, the AL East, the ballparks that he pitches there, not going to do him any favors. But I still like him. He's got that slider changeup combo now, and I think he feels pretty good about both of them. And then Daniel Norris, starting pitcher 94, pretty much right at the same range. Just another guy, again, we talked about a lot last week, but I like him quite a bit, especially at this price. Good Lord, way too cheap. But the guy that I want to add here is the guy that Matt, of course, mentioned earlier on the show as I was trying to joke about Ryan Vogelsong. It is Alberto Mejia, who we did get. Oh God, where did we get that? Oh, from the Giants for Eduardo Nunez last year. That's right. His fastball velocity is up this spring training. From he was about 90 miles an hour last year. He's hitting 94, 95 right now. It's from the left side, fastball, slider, sinker, changeup. And 14 and a third innings pitched this spring. He's got 14 strikeouts and 4 walks, 1.88 ERA. So I think that in a very, very, very deep league, he is now a name that you could look at. He could potentially, I mean, it's not like he's got a huge competition as far as the fifth star. He's got to beat out like the likes of Tyler Duffy and I guess Jose Barrios. We'll see, if they want to keep him up or send him to AAA to start the season. I think they could go either way. But, I mean, they've got a lot of injuries that always occur in that rotation, it seems like. So at some point or another, I think you will see Mejia. So I think he makes for a really nice stash in deeper leagues. I always thought that he was going to be a real back-end guy, but perhaps a little upside for more.
Let me ask you this. How do you think Jesse would pronounce Mejia's full name?
Mejia? Ouija board?
You guys haven't done that in a while. We need to have a Jesse pronounces thing going on.
It's sort of a rarity when he finds the show these days, since it's mostly baseball stuff, and he's just he's the bullshit guy.
Right.
If I could touch on a couple of guys that you guys mentioned as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think John Gray is the guy that can conquer Coors. I have him at 36. I know that's bullish, but, I mean, I think the kid's going to get 200 innings, 200 strikeouts. I think he pitches to a sub-4 ERA, the upside possibly 350. I think it's there. I think he'll get better on the road this season. It'll be his sophomore year in the major leagues. So I think that will help. And he did pitch. I mean, at home, he had a 10 strikeout per nine and an under 2 walks per nine. That's phenomenal. He had the strikeouts. The ground ball percentage was pretty good at home, too. So that's a guy that I'm pretty bullish on at that at his price. Gesellman, as a Mets fan, I definitely like what I've seen. I just want to caution some people. You know, we have to exfoliate this over a full season because I do think he's going to get plenty of opportunities because Mets pitchers are pretty much always injured. And we have, you know, Zach Wheeler should be starting in the extended spring training. I think that's the wise move. Matt Harvey, I really don't know what to expect as far as innings this year. So that's a wild card. And just, you know, pitchers in general are going to get hurt. So, I mean, I do like Gesellman. He's a guy that I have taken late. He's starting to move up. Everybody sees that now that he's probably got the rotation spot. But two veteran guys, if I could mention, that I think help people out, especially in deeper leagues, that, you know, at least the first guy is getting love now because he's having a fantastic spring. But I was kind of on him before spring training. Is Francisco Liriano. He obviously went to Toronto last year, and after having a pretty shitty time in Pittsburgh last season, turning things around. And a lot of the key to that success is his being reunited with Russell Martin. He's been pretty damn good with Russell Martin as his backstop. They were together in Pittsburgh. So I'm looking for – he was a guy that was going like – mid-20s in a 15-teamer. He was a reserve round guy. But he's starting to move pretty fast. People are pushing him up. And the last guy, nobody likes him. Nobody gets excited to take him. I just like him for the fact he's not an upside guy. He was pretty amazing for me last year, though, I will say. Is Big Irv Santana. He's pretty much to an under 4 ERA. Gets you 180 innings. When Kershaw went down to me, I had a Kershaw issue. He went down at the end of June. I had Santana on my team. I really didn't pitch him for the first 3 months. I kept saying I was going to cut him. But for some reason, I was like, you know what? I don't need to cut him. Let's just keep him on the team. I inserted him into my rotation, and he pitched to like a 230 ERA or something crazy like that the next 3 months.
Yeah.
So I don't expect that, but he's a guy that's going to give you innings and not kill you.
Yeah, great. Both great calls there. Big Irv, of course, he's my dude. I just mentioned Yancey Eaton, and I was talking with him last year. We were playing some DFS and tucking some lineups, and I told him I was throwing Big Irv out there. He's like, "Oh my God, you love trash pitchers, don't you?" I'm like, "Man, this guy can you know shove it once in a while. He can get on a heater." And that day that I rostered him, he was horrendous. But shortly thereafter, he went on a streak. Of course, I never played him after that, but. Good.
Yeah, that run was pretty amazing. And he really had like 2.5 months of solid pitching.
He does that too. He just goes on runs. So, you know, if he's crappy, just wait for him to put together a really nice game and then pick him up.
What I just want to say about Irvin Santana, and it's funny because as an Angels fan, I watched him for a long time. Nate, as the Twins fan, you get to watch him now. He never shows any emotion in any scenario ever. I've never seen a more robotic pitcher than Irvin Santana. He's just I don't think he has emotions whatsoever.
You know what it is? It's that chin beard that he has. It just keeps his facial features from moving. It's so tight.
That's true.
he's literally incapable of smiling. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break and then talk about some of our avoids. Okay, we are back, folks, and this is our final segment of the day. We're going on the flip side of the targets, guys that we hate. We are going to avoid them. So, guys that you just really don't like, Matt, we'll start with you once again. Who are you avoiding this year?
Well, I think you have to avoid him. I know he kind of got cleared to start throwing again, but in all honesty, until I see something from him, is Sonny Gray. I know he was a good pitcher. I liked him. I don't think he was ever as great as he was made out to be, but I thought he was a solid number two guy for a fantasy rotation, you know. And it's at the point where, I mean, Oakland blew their chance to move him. I mean, maybe in a couple of months he's pitching in the majors again and he's doing well. Great. I'll scoop him up, maybe give him a shot because he plays in Oakland. And I do like that ballpark. But he's not somebody that people should be drafting right now and holding on hope. You know, he's not a guy to hold on your bench, in my opinion. So he's a guy that's going late that for now I'd move on from.
Fair enough. Van, what do you say?
A couple names. I mean, obviously the injury guys are ones I'm not going to mess with. Anthony DeSclafani, Sonny Gray that you just mentioned. They're guys that I'm just have no interest in. I think pitching's still deep enough that there's just no need to really worry about them. Look elsewhere. I think Tyson Ross can kind of be thrown on that list. He's still drafting it a little, getting drafted a little higher than I would like. Maybe it's Jordan Zimmerman. I think it's probably a little too high for him. I'll take one here that I think is kind of outside of the consensus. I think a lot of people are expecting some big things from him, but I'm not really that excited, and that's Dylan Bundy. Yes, I think he has the stuff, and I'm excited that he's introducing the cutter, but I have no I just don't think there's any chance in the world that he throws any significant innings. And until he hits that 150, 160 inning mark, I'm just not going to touch him. I just don't think you're going to get any value out of him. Now, he's not going that early. He's going, let's see. Well, it's a 69th pitcher off the board at 256. So maybe that's okay to take the risk there, but it's just not for me. It's not a guy that I'm going to target.
I'm actually buying Bundy. But I do understand your concerns. They are warranted. He hasn't done the innings and stuff. But I think he's a guy to buy.
He's got the good stuff. I will certainly give him that. And I had him last year or year before in a dynasty league when he finally started throwing some innings and people got excited about him. I traded him away as quickly as I could. So maybe that'll come back to haunt me. But I don't know. I'm just avoiding this year.
Yeah, I agree with everybody that you listed until you got to Dylan Bundy. I'm with Matt on this one. I'm excited to draft him. It is ADP right now where it's at. He's at the point where he's not going to kill you because I think it is only a matter of time before he's injured again. Like, I don't know how many innings he's going to give you. Maybe you can think of him as sort of like a poor man's Rich Hill. You know, if you get 120 innings out of him, I think you're going to have some pretty good ratios. Because I remember writing about him for Fantastics last year when he was sort of emerging from the muckety muck of being injured and being in the bullpen and so on and so forth, and looking into his like whiff rates on his pitches and everything, I'm like, my God, this is where it's all been. This is why everybody loves him so much. It all looks very, very good, and especially if he's bringing back that cutter, I'm actually very excited for Dylan Bundy. So we shall see. It's just all about the injuries with him.
Another guy I'd like to add to the list, just because I mean, I wasn't too high on him this year. I thought he still had a chance. But he's just constantly has arm problems, and that's Drew Pomeranz. I think eventually he just has to go to the bullpen, and I just don't see him holding up as a starter anymore, which is a shame after that first half of 2016.
I fully agree. He was the name that was just on the tip of my tongue. He is on my list as far as avoids, and he's already injured, so I think that makes it even a little easier. He might even start the year on the disabled list. We'll see. So he definitely makes my avoids. Another guy we actually touched on, Adam Wainwright. I'm just not interested in him at all. But then two picks after him, well, two starting pitcher picks anyway, behind him at 57 is Drew Smyly. And I get the bounce back notion. You know, I think he was pretty unlucky last year. Change of scenery. He's been better. He's struck a lot of guys out before. But he's still a guy who has a consistent track record of injury, and it's just a lot of bounce back to be looking at, even at pick 199 overall, where he's at. But
Smiley's like you say, it's the shoulder that scares me. Going into last season, Smiley in the AL, I was pretty high on, and he let me down. And Corbin in the NL, I was high on, and he crashed. So, but Patrick Corbin is actually showing some signs of life. this spring.
Oh boy, I don't know if I can buy into that either, man. I was also burned by him pretty hard last year.
I mean, he's going to get an opportunity, I think, in Arizona.
All right. Well, he's definitely going to be a guy I'm watching early on then, because I don't even know what's his ADP right now. I don't even.
He's not in the top 93. I can tell you that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was actually when I was looking for Adalberto Mejia. He wasn't on the list. His ADP was unknown. So that made me feel special. But anyway, actually, one more guy that I want to ask you guys about before we get out of here. Shelby Miller, seeing some increased velocity this year. Either of you guys buying back in on Shelby Miller?
You can go ahead, Matt.
You know what? He's a guy that I'm not going to take the plunge yet. I'll watch him, and if it continues, if he has a couple of good starts, maybe I'll get in on some Fab bidding if he's still on the waiver wire. Because it's just tough. I think the kid does have some promise. I think the kid, he wants to. He's a professional athlete, and last season really couldn't have gone worse with the whole trade. Dave Stewart got fired. I mean, he was just pure dog shit, to be honest with you. But he is, there are some signs. I'm not gonna even draft him in a reserve round, like 30th round yet. But if he's laying around a waiver wire and he does put a couple of stuffs together, I might invest.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think I'm a little higher on than you, but that's not to say I'm high on him. He has always been a pitcher that is not someone I target because they're a guy who doesn't really strike a lot of people out, yet again has the velocity. So I don't know. I didn't like where he was being valued last year or even the year – obviously last year, but even the year prior. And then this year it tanked so badly that, he's not on the top 93 pitchers here, way down past pick 328 at least. So I think maybe he's a guy I would take a flyer on, obviously as a bench spot. I'm not going to stick him in my rotation and hope for the best, but if I've got him on my bench and, a month in the season I look up and he's had a run of decent starts, then okay, maybe I'll trust him enough to throw him in there.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm definitely taking a wait-and-see approach. He's completely free right now at pick 432, wherever he is getting drafted. So nobody really is buying in yet either. But I will definitely be keeping an eye on him. But
since you're a Twins fan, I mean, I think the talent's still there. I just don't know if 2017 is a year. Jose Berríos, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm still in on him. Like you said, I don't know what we'll see exactly from him this year. He can't possibly be as bad as he was at the major league level last year. And I am really, really interested to see exactly how Jason Castro affects the Twins pitching staff as a whole, and particularly Jose Berríos, because Castro is basically the exact opposite as a defender from Kurt Suzuki that they had last year. Kurt Suzuki was as he gave up as many defensive runs as Castro is, in the positive direction. I'm not well versed in the catching metrics, but basically that's how it works out. He's more than twice as good defense. He's an elite pitch framer, and I think that as far as sequencing and everything, he'll go a long ways towards helping the development of especially Berríos. So I don't necessarily know if you'll see him even pitching a three this year. His stuff has so much movement that it's hard to get it over the plate sometimes. So I am very interested to see it. I think that it might be best served starting him at AAA just to get some of that confidence back, because I think it was pretty much shot to hell last year with, I don't know what he had. He had just about a 9 ERA, I think, over 50 innings or so. So it can't get much worse. But long term, in Dynasty, if you can buy him low, I'm all in.
Yeah, I agree. If you can get him in Dynasty on the cheap, I'd be doing the same thing. I mean, who knows? Maybe the second half of 2017, it starts to show. There's definitely potential that I see, and I'm not giving up on him.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised as well if the second half is when you really start to see the young guy emerge like you want him to.
Or maybe in a few years he gets traded to the Angels because he never put it together, and then something happens and he's really good there. Who knows?
when he's Ricky Nolasco, then we can do it.
Exactly, yeah. Boy, Ricky Nolasco. That's a human being. That's about all I can say about him.
Yes, indeed. All right, Matt, it has been great fun having you on. Before we get out of here, why don't you tell all the good listeners out there in podcast land where they can find your work?
You can check me out on Twitter at CTM Baseball. You can go to ctmbaseball.com. I have some rankings up there and stuff. I'll be putting some blogs as the season starts. And you can catch me on FNTSY throughout the week. I've been helping out on the 8 to 10 shows. You can check me out there during the week and on the weekends. And, that's pretty much it. It's baseball season's just about here, boys. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And I wish everyone good luck in their fantasy seasons.
Thank you very much for joining us, Matt. Van, what do you want to plug this week?
Well, first I want to ask, what does CTM stand for?
I was charging the mound, but I just figured it was just a hell of a lot simple.
So kind of like they did with Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like, it's KFC. They don't even say Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. Similar deal. All right. Well, you can find my stuff, Twitter, at Manly Van Lee. Find my website, BootuInc.com. That's BOOTUINC.com. I host another podcast with a high-pitched whiny kid named Brian called The Backup Catcher. You can find us at BackupCatcher.com.
There you go. All right. And as always, folks, you can find my work on Fantastics Insider Baseball as well as Big Guy Fantasy Sports. I was on their podcast last night, and that'll be coming out, if I think, probably tomorrow. Oh, well, God, I forgot by the time this is out, it will have been last week. So go check it out then, talking about my dudes and don'ts for 2017. So thank you again, Matt, for joining us. And until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.